welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are chasing down another European tour in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was 10th time lucky as we finally broke the Fulham hoodoo at the Amex on Saturday, and it also made it 6 wins in a row as we boosted our hopes of a return to Europe next season. And it's even had the mainstream media admitting that we're in the conversation for a Champions League place. There's still lots of work to do, though, and that starts this weekend as we head to Manchester, hoping for a double-double, having already completed wins home and away against the red side of the city. But can we do the same against Pep's faltering Blues? Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Tom Hyland, and also welcome back to Vicky Rees. Hello, hello, hello. Well, yeah. What a difference a late victory makes to the mood, eh?
I tell you what, I was thinking before coming on, it makes such a change coming on after a game like that rather than for a therapy session after a horrible loss.
It has been very much like that. But you enjoy the therapy sessions there, Tom.
They've got me 3 points of the season, yeah, that's for sure.
What was the therapy session you needed to come on for last time then?
Had we lost 7-0?
No, it wasn't that one. I think there was 3 or 4 on the bounce. And came on after that earlier in the season. But yeah.
Well, Vicky, probably did you need therapy after that 7-0 defeat?
I can't remember if I've been on the show since that game. So I reserve the right to forget completely what I may or may not have said. But I think I was always kind of inclined to put it down as one of those days, notwithstanding we lost to Everton as well. But we weren't on a major run of defeats. But who am I kidding? It was an awful day out.
It was an awful day.
We're not talking about that particularly.
But the simple point is... It's you look at the relative directions that the two teams in question have since gone on, I think it gave our lot a kick up the backside, one they possibly needed. And I include the manager in this because, you know, how true it is, I'd like to believe it's true, the whole thing of taking his tactics for that day and burning them because they really didn't work. Even if it's an apocryphal story, I'm more than happy to believe
it is true. It is true.
That's fine. So, okay, so lesson learned from Fabian, but also Forest. I mean, it's not to say that 7-0 and that's their job done, but they have not been on a great run. Yes, I know we've got them coming up in the cup and all bets are off and everything like that, but I still can't help feeling that embarrassing though it was, it's almost like the team needed it. Did that? Is that rotten? Is that harsh, Tom?
I think, and I've said it to a few people, that after a defeat like that, it forces a few conversations to be had that might not be had otherwise, forces kind of everyone to either come together or go against each other. And I think fortunately for us, it's the former, and, you know, it's galvanised the squad.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, you know, there was lots of... rumors and stories and people calling Fabian's demise at that particular point. I mean, I was particularly sad at one point, but you know, it was very much a case of don't send me flowers because I'm not dead yet. And speaking of flowers, Al, we've got a competition coming up very shortly.
Yes, more details later. No, it was as Vicky pointed out, it was a weird result. It was a weird situation. And it's still only, what, our one defeat in 8, 9, 10 games, something like that? I mean, forget what's coming up because, you know, you never can tell with the Albion what's going to happen. But I still put it back to you know, this particular stat. Apart from that Forest game, we've conceded 6 goals in the league this year.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing for me is... You guys know that I love the bedwetting on social media after a particular result, and enjoyed that kind of fallout. But then also it's given us that Lewis Dunk sign at the darts last week as well. Hertzler in, out, in, out, in, out, in, which I just think is is one of those very, very funny Albion moments.
Vic, what's your take on the bedwetters?
I think, to be honest, I've got to the point in life where I'm too old to get sort of too high or too low. I'm actually starting to turn into Fabian Hürzeler there, although again, I'm also too old to be Fabian Hürzeler. But I think,
You're too many things to be ha Fabian Hürzeler, but okay,
well,
old is one
okay,
thing.
yeah, but I tried to look at it at the time that we'd actually started the year, and I mean the calendar year, quite well, because we'd had the win over Norwich, we'd beaten Man United again. I know, again, that's two easy games on paper, and somebody else. There was a third win, wasn't there? And we actually started the year quite well, and then we had that sort of the usual slightly depressing performance against Everton, which unfortunately is what we just do against Everton, isn't it? And I thought that maybe Dyche moving on and Moyes coming in might make it slightly better, but in reality, it didn't, and Everton did what Everton always do. But looking beyond that, they had it was two defeats, and it didn't strike me worth losing my mind over, much as the Forest game was hideous. I just kind of felt it was probably one of those days when everything that could go wrong did, and some of the stuff that happened was just daft. And if you look at the figures, they didn't even have that many more shots than us.
They had 9 shots on target. They had 9 shots on target, and 7 of them went in.
And that, it was some slightly questionable refereeing, and I'm thrilled to learn that we've got the same referee again for Man City on Saturday. But I'm not for one second blaming Simon Hooper for that result, because it was down to us. But listen, I'm sure we've covered that one before in many of your calls. So I'm looking forward, not back.
Yeah, Tom.
I think also what's kind of the benefit of hindsight is that Everton and Forest at that time were probably the two form sides in the league. So actually picking up those losses in hindsight wasn't an overall surprise. The other thing is, Vicky, I still hold a grudge against Simon Hooper for things he did in the Championship and League One. He's just
Totally, absolutely. I'm never forgiving him
Are
for
we
the
talking
penalty.
with the
Hold
either
on,
referee that gave the
AFC
penalty
who?
outside the box or the
AFC
no
who?
whistle?
I don't care how long this goes on in my head. I'm forever going to be fuming about the fact that Hooper added on 9 minutes at Forest. I realise completely that's irrational. It's not the biggest point of the day, but nobody ever, ever adds on 9 minutes in a game when someone's getting thrashed. It's a token gesture. You go 2 minutes, 3 minutes, gone, off you go. Let the losing team go quietly. But not Simon Hooper, because he knew that that was going to be a big game on Match of the Day because of the score, and he thought, I'm going to let this go as long as I can before I get more TV time.
The referee's pension pot had 8-0 on their accumulator there,
That's it. Not forgiven, ever, Simon Hooper.
well, the problem is now that they're giving referees microphones in some of the games, you actually get to hear their voices as well, and it's really off-putting. But anyway, moving on. We're not, obviously we're not going to dwell too much on that aberration a few weeks ago, because we've got Fulham to talk about, and 10th time of asking, we've finally beaten them in the Premier League. It's all very well kicking their sweet derrieres 5-0 in the Championship, but we've now done it finally at top level, and now obviously we've just got to do it at the Cottage.
But I still think it's just one of those sort of ridiculous aberrations, really, isn't it? It's a statistical anomaly. West Ham have only beaten us once in the Premier League. Do they tear their hair out? Well, I hope so. I don't think it's still. Have Wolves beaten us in the top flight yet? Not sure. I wouldn't say answers on a postcard, because I'm really not that worried. But there are teams to whom some people have the hoodoo over them and some don't. I think the difference is this time, certainly in the second half, is that just for once, we were so much better than them. Where previously, I mean, I remember the game, the one we lost 4-2 up there. Both teams were terrible, and we still managed to concede 4 goals. I think it wasn't that far short of every defender picking up the ball and throwing it into our own net. It was that bad.
Well, I feel like they've had the run of luck against us as well, haven't they? Not to say that they haven't been good, and there's been games when they've outclassed us. They did in a game when Potter was there, one of Potter's last games, I think, and under De Zerbi as well. But I also think they've just had a bit of a rub of the green at times. Even the game at the Cottage this season, we were the better side, in my opinion, in that game. We didn't win it, and I'm not suggesting that they didn't deserve to win because ultimately they took their chances. But boy, did we give them at least one of those chances. Verbruggen passed the ball to, I think it was Iwobi in the penalty area. Yeah, and we just gifted it to them. And that game was infuriating because I honestly thought we were better than them in that game and we were trying to win it. And I think, second half on Saturday, again, we were the better side in the second half despite being outclassed slightly in the first.
But Wolves have never beaten us whilst we're in the top flight, but they did beat us in the FA Cup a year or so ago.
Well, I'm not worried about that, but no. I mean, the best shooting, I think, that day, Vic, was probably us at our own feet, wasn't
It
it?
was all, yeah, it was a typical classic Albion at Craven Cottage in the Premier League
But I
performance.
mean,
We
the
should have
interesting
won
thing
it, but
going into this fixture, I mean, particularly if you're listening to like the mainstream media, they're coming out, they're talking up about the fact that the both sides are on a really rich vein of form. They're both performing really, really well. Again, Fulham only recently promoted, really, in the scheme of things, a lot more recently than we were, and the fact that they're also in the European conversation, it's nice to have more teams chasing it, isn't it?
you say nice. I saw something in one of the papers today, or it might have been in The Athletic, where it suggested that teams as far down as 11th could, depending on how certain circumstances pan out, could actually qualify for Europe this season. And frankly, if the team that is currently occupying 11th place in the Premier League was to qualify for Europe, I would find that utterly, utterly hideous.
But I
One,
think,
go on, Tom.
would that be
Tom.
somewhere in South London, by any
It may
chance?
well be. It may
Yeah.
well be.
Sorry, go on, Tom.
I think it's a broader piece of just how competitive the Premier League is between like third and 15th this year, really. Just every team is beating each other and picking up points off of each other. You've got the bottom three that are just frankly awful. You could throw Wolves into that as well as a team that's just not doing it. So effectively, everyone's beating them, and then just it's a free for all elsewhere. And Liverpool's the only team that's been able to find any sort of consistency. So I think it really shows that gulf between teams coming up and what they're having to face, because there's a lot of teams now in the middle of the league that have been able to build a squad over the last few years. A lot of money's gone into it. And some of the managers are very good. Marco Silva's a great organizer. He's got Fulham really going. Is it Iraola,
Iraola, yeah.
Bournemouth? Like, just really good. And what it takes for, I think, a team to get relegated next year is for someone to fall off. It needs a manager to leave and some players to leave from a team, and them just to have a terrible season like Wolves are.
So basically, sorry, in a nutshell, Tom. So I think probably if I can get what you're saying here, is all right. We've got Liverpool at the top of the table. To me, I don't know what anyone else thinks. To me, the titles is theirs to lose right now.
Oh, it's done.
You've got Arsenal, who are sort of, in no man's land between first and third, and then after that, third down to, as you say, maybe 15th, something like that. All of whom are maybe within a sniff, maybe not as far down as 15th. But is it a case that what you're saying is that the relegation battle, where once upon a time it's usually anywhere between six and eight teams, is now only down to three or four, because three or four of those eight have raised themselves to such an extent that they can pick up the points, leaving the others behind. Is that kind of the point you're making?
Yeah, and I think it's I think promoted teams are almost getting to the point where it's relying on off seasons from established teams. So your
Like
likes of
Manchester United.
I mean, if it was any other season, it would have been wonderful. But with the bottom three as they are, it's just not really a competition. But you think of the likes of Wigan in the league for years and years. One bad season, they're gone for, well, not forever, but for a long time.
Yeah,
Wolves have a
Stoke as
terrible
well.
season, it's competing. Stoke have a terrible season, they drop. So all it takes is a few things to come together for a team that's in that middle pack to really then be fighting relegation. But I think that's tightening all the time because the teams are just getting stronger in that middle bit, and the teams are having to rely on bad things happening.
Well,
But
the
it is.
last promoted team to stay up, Vicky, though, was Nottingham Forest, and they actually got a points deduction because they flouted the rules afterward to get there.
Yeah, and then they got the points deduction reduced anyway, didn't they? So, I mean, I think whilst the relegation party appears pretty much sewn up, and I know Wolves are still just about in there, but sort of gut feeling suggests that they're probably going to keep themselves afloat, and the other three teams are just so bad. The one sort of glitch in the matrix there is what happens to Manchester City.
Yeah,
So
I was about to
it
say, yeah.
is it's in the interests of Ipswich and Leicester. We'll ignore Southampton, but it's in the interest of Ipswich and Leicester to at least keep trying, just in case something happens to Manchester City that results in them being deducted a very significant and hilarious number of points. So I'm kind of hoping that that doesn't ha that there's been talk that it might happen this week, and I really hope it doesn't, because I think I'm not sure I'd want to go to an angrier Manchester City on Saturday,
Yeah,
because they
that would galvanize them, wouldn't it? Yeah.
but I think the other thing with the mid-table teams as well, there's been a lot of inconsistency, and if you take Liverpool out of the equation, then maybe Arsenal to a degree, because Arsenal are still roughly where you would expect them to be, but everyone else pretty much has gone on runs of games. So Bournemouth had a winning run, and then everyone said, oh, they're in Champions League contention, and all of a sudden they've dropped off the pace. Villa had a little run. Newcastle always go on little runs and then drop off again. We've done it. It seems like, those other teams, including us, have found it quite difficult to keep that going, which, gives everyone a bit of hope, doesn't it? Because it's very up and down in that block underneath the top two.
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, everyone's beaten everyone, but I think again, you look at the teams that are likely to be relegated, they've come up and kept the teams that pretty much won promotion at a canter last season from the Championship. There's not a huge amount of investment gone in. But then you also look at some of the players that, we've signed, that others have signed. That middle pack is cherry picking the best Championship players now and getting them into their squad. So the likes of Jorginho, arguably Leeds' best player, suddenly is now with us. That happens
It's rare that we pick players up from England, though, isn't it? I mean, of the current batch that we bought over the last 3 or 4 years, I think it's only two spring to mind, actually. I mean,
Well,
Webster going back about 4 or 5 years.
yeah, but they're all kind of contenders for Championship Player of the Year.
Joao Pedro.
Webster, Pedro,
That,
Jorginho.
yeah, that's the two I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Pedro, and obviously Webster a few years ago from the Championship, but again, well, he was sort of, persona non grata at Watford. But yeah, because we'll go and find the Liechtenstein fourth division, which is basically one man and his dog, and we'll pick a rough diamond from that and polish them up. I think that in our case, we are noted, and I think that the reputation is probably is quite fair that we do go and find players. Yeah, we send them out on loan for a year. Or even, sort of hold them back for a short while. Diego Costa, for all them into Miami saying this is a record MLS fee. It's
Diego
still,
Costa.
did I say Costa? I'm sorry, Diego Gomez. I'm doing it again with surnames, aren't I? Sorry. Well, yeah, we can buy Diego Costa and he can bulldoze the stadium with his head. Sorry, Diego Gomez from Inter Miami. And even then, I didn't realize it was only inverted commas, £10 million. So we are still in the business of looking at the cheap end of the market. And what with Paul Barber saying that, the likes of a 30, £40 million transfer fee that we're paying for any given player makes them, quote, uncomfortable. And I get the point because it's not part of their business model, although sometimes needs must. They will still keep trawling the sort of like the unusual divisions
Yeah.
across the world. But
Yeah,
it's
but
it, we're not gonna. I mean, with the last two sets of trading figures that have come out, we're not gonna repeat that next year.
you say that out. I mean, you mentioned it earlier yourself that we don't regularly buy players from this country, and our two biggest our record transfer fees are for João Pedro, which is 30 million from Watford, and 40 million for
That's my
Jorginho
point.
from Leeds.
But that's my point exactly. We don't do that because they're expensive. So we try not to, because they know full well that if we were to buy either of those two from France or Spain or wherever, even from if we bought either of them from their home countries, we'd have probably picked them up for a quarter of those prices.
But then it's not just us, is it? It's the broader teams around us that are also buying players from the championship as well. So more broadly, taking the best players from the top end of the league below that's wanting to come up and compete and spreading it across, 10 teams in the Premier League, it's making that step up even harder than it was. And I think that, when we came up, I think it was easier to stay up, frankly.
Well, yes, we did. We made sure we did so by the skin of our teeth. I mean, and we'll take, when I say that, I mean, what was it, the 5 millimeters of Pascal Gross's in a winner against Manchester United? It was the skin of our teeth, and even the next year, with Chris Hughton, love him to bits, but that last half season that we had under him is probably the worst part of our tenure in the Premier League. It was the second part of our second season there, and we clearly regressed. And if we're talking about the game from a couple of weeks ago, hey, we beat Bournemouth, isn't that great? Yeah, because we've still got it in mind that probably 6 years ago we lost 5-0 at home to them, and with a case of not
Maybe.
just shooting yourself in the foot, but taking a machine gun to all of your toes.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, but again, the Bournemouth game, like I've heard someone else talking about that game, a neutral talking about that game again today, actually, on I think it was on the Totally Football Show or something, but they were basically saying it's the best game they've seen this season.
Really?
We're actually getting the plaudits now, which we weren't
Well, I
necessarily.
think that's actually more. I don't think it was necessary for the quality. I think it was more for the blood and thunder of it.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what it was. It was end-to-end stuff. Both teams wanted to win it, and although that's probably what every game of football should be like, it's not.
Yeah, I still maintain that the Newcastle performance was better. I thought the Newcastle game was better, actually. So, I suppose, swings and roundabouts. I mean, Vicky, have you noticed? I mean, irrespective of the fact the results have improved, have you noticed an improvement in quality of the performances?
I think it's just a very different type of performance, isn't it? Because the De Zerbi game was all about, piling everyone forward and let's not worry too much about defending. We'll just try and make sure we've got the ball and going forward all the time. So, and that is why we had several games where we got absolutely hammered. And with us under De Zerbi, I always felt that it was very much, win or bust with that. There was no kind of middle ground. If you look at the number of games we drew last season compared to how many we drew this season, and yes, of course, you can look at that both ways, can't you? You can go, we've drawn a lot more games this season. That's because
Because we
we
were
have the
careless.
ability to win them. But on the other hand, last season it was we've lost far fewer games this season than we did last year, and it felt like if we turned up for a game last season and we weren't quite on it. You knew from the off that we were going to get hammered, whether it was reflected in the score or not. But the Villa game away, the Bournemouth game away,
Luton.
Luton away, it was just you knew from minute one of those games that it was going to be a catastrophic day. And even that game at Forest, did we know from the first minute it was going to be catastrophic? Maybe after about 10 minutes, we thought, yeah, this might not end well. But that's the real oddity, isn't it? If you look at that result, that stands out. Even when we've lost games this season, it's been quite close. So it's a pretty different style of play. I think it's also apparent now that the injuries are starting to ease off, and we're getting, we've still got some key players out, but then you could argue that Dunk wouldn't be getting straight back in the team anyway. I think Kadioli would make a difference when if he was fit, but beyond that, we're sort of getting a settled lineup now, and I think that the confidence is of those players in being in the team or in and around the squad is starting to really show.
I think the only one person I'd say that is I'd really rather see Veltman back in the side.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah,
I mean, apart from that.
we're missing fullbacks, aren't we? I think we're definitely missing fullbacks at the moment, whichever side you look at. And I, if we're still talking about the Fulham game, I'm. And perhaps other recent ones as well. Purvis does concern me, and I think he had a very weak game against Fulham. I think I felt like his brain was a second slower than everyone else, and there were several occasions when the ball's played past him, and he's kind of stood there for a split second, then started to run, and it just felt like his mind wasn't. I'm not one of these people that go, oh, his mind is elsewhere. He's looking for a move. I just don't think he's on it. He's on his form, and he concerns me at the moment.
Well, Al, you
I
said
say.
that after the game as well. Sorry, Tom.
I don't think Estepinian's fully recovered since the injury last season. Like, after he came back and scored that worldie against Spurs, other than that, he's not really been quite at the levels that he was in the previous season. It's fascinating. And just picking up one of the things you said, Vicky, about, we knew if we didn't turn up back end of last season, we'd lose. It was almost as though the squad kind of mirrored De Zerbi's emotions and instability as such, whereas with the same squad now, it seems a lot more focused and settled.
But this season, we have now won 13 points after falling behind, which is a steep increase on where it has previously.
Yeah, I'd rather
And
we didn't fall
actually, I
behind
mean,
in the.
Liverpool are currently they've got the most from falling behind with 19 points. We're level with Chelsea. I can't remember. There's one other team that's above us, but
I'd rather we didn't fall behind in the first place.
well, no, but sometimes it happens,
We
and
can't get out of
it's how
Liverpool.
you react to it, and that's one of the things that's improved.
Hark back to the Potter days where going one behind was a death sentence for us in terms of a result. It's quite the turnaround.
Okay, well let's have a look at the Fulham game in a little bit more detail, and I've got to say, Alex Iwobi, take a bow. That was sensational. I mean, terrible defending, awful defending, but what a storming run and a great cross. I can say that because we won.
Yeah. Do you think he meant that cross, or do you think he just wanted to sling
He
it over to
totally
the
meant
only
that
person who was
cross.
He
Yeah.
meant it because you see him look up on the footage. But I mean, that's kind of his job. I mean, yes, it was a nice run. He had quite a lot of wide open spaces after we sort of casually stepped aside and said, "There you go, Big Al." It was a nice goal. Was it Webster? No, it was Van Hecke, wasn't it? Probably caught slightly on the back foot there.
Yeah.
Nice goal. Don't know what the celebration was about. All 15 minutes of it. But yeah,
Something to do with wrestling, apparently.
Oh, is that? I thought he
oh, is it a
really, really,
Mexican
really wants.
wrestling thing?
I thought he really wanted to break his neck.
Well, no, apparently it's
Yeah,
something to do
it was
with.
a nice goal. I
That
wouldn't go over the top about it.
it's the sort of celebration your manager really doesn't want you to have. Now, the thing is, as you know, AD, I got sort of quite cross earlier on in that move. Now, three or four times, you could see that what the team were trying to do was ping those diagonal balls over to and now either one-on-one or lonely wide player. So it was either going over to Mitoma or it was going over to Minté, and it was working now and again. But if you're going to have that, the risk you take is that your ball is either floated or isn't strong enough or isn't right enough, in which case the fullback's going to cut it out. Okay, fine, it happens. But I think that when they do that, the important thing is that all that a defender can do, if they're going to head it away, is just, well, head it away without any sort of realization that they can head it to a teammate or back to the goalkeeper or something like that. The best they can do is head it 10 yards away. And that is where, and I think this is, I'm not a manager, I'm not a Premier League manager, but I've seen how it works, is that you then follow up on the second ball, knowing full well that it's going to drop 10 yards in, back in front of the defender who's just headed it away. And I saw that. Am I going to name names? No, I'm going to say that no one was there. Someone probably should have been there. One or two players were probably about 5, 10 yards away from where they should have been. But what it meant was that he was able to take the ball down and then run off with it. Whereas if you're going to play, and what is actually for me a high risk, quote, champagne pass, you've got to have a backup for it. And for me, no one was there. Where other times they tried the pass, didn't come off, defender cuts it out, but then you're there for the second ball. But it just left Fulham the freedom of the right wing. And yeah, Iwobi's run was brilliant. And as you point out, Estupiñan, not the fastest fella. Ayari, not the fastest fella. Iwobi left them looking like, well, me.
I'd like to see you and Alex Iwobi in a race, Al. Can
I really
we
wouldn't.
arrange that, please?
Only if I can get a sort of a 90-yard start.
I still wouldn't back you, Al, no offence.
No, I don't think I would. But okay, but we'd like as
Actually,
we
beg your
all
offence, Vicky.
as we well know, we did actually go in level at half time. And amazingly, it was Jean-Paul Van Hekker's first goal for us.
Two words, about time.
Well, he reckons the floodgates are now going to open. He said, "I'm not convinced." But I mean, that was actually our only first goal from a central defender this season.
Is it?
And obviously, yeah, Dunk hasn't scored this season. Igor's never scored for us.
Webster?
Webster hasn't scored this season.
Goodness me. Well, the first thing that I thought when as soon as Van Hecke headed the ball was, to paraphrase Barry Davis, and where was the Fulham defence? But frankly, who cares?
Well, actually, I mean, I'm going to give an awful lot of credit. I mean, I didn't actually spot this at the time. I don't know if you did, Tom, but Jack Hintrywood was very, very crucial in this move.
To be honest, I think I was too busy losing my mind. I didn't really watch the replays too closely, because I genuinely put that up there as one of the best headers that I've seen scored live.
Curled in, didn't it? I mean, it was a header and it
Oh,
curled in.
it's still going in, I think.
I
But
think the reason it looks like it took so long to get in is because probably you and I were directly behind the line of the ball. And because we're behind the line of it, you can't see that it's moving.
But so basically, I mean, you've obviously not seen it, but what happened was obviously Ayari was taking the free kick. Jack Hintrywood blocked off Calvin Bassey, which basically left JP in all that space because Bassey was trying to get there, and it was just that block which was so crucial to that goal.
That said, I think the free kick was good enough that even if the defender was there, I think Van Hagel would have had still had a good chance of getting there first.
He wouldn't have been so lonely.
There is that.
I also can't quite understand why it took so long for VAR to look at it.
It was
Because
probably
watching
about
it
20
back,
seconds, but it felt like 20 minutes.
because looking back at it, there's no way it was offside. Like,
No.
that doesn't need anything other than a, yeah, it's fine.
Is that what they were checking you for? Were they
Yeah,
checking Jack Hintrywood's foul?
it was
The
long
question
enough
was
that it
over
came
whether
up
they're
on the
blocking the
scan.
keeper's view, isn't it? Because Van Hecke was never offside, but there were others that were, and therefore they just need to be sure that they are not blocking the keeper's view, or there's any other reason on planet Earth that they can find to disallow it. Because
Yeah.
Fulham.
I mean,
But
watching the replay back, the keeper had a brilliant view as he followed it all the way round until it hit the post and went
it
in.
was in slow motion. Yes, it
But
is.
it is Bernd Leno, and Bernd Leno loves to moan about everything. And if you watch the replay of the penalty incident, he spends a long time jabbering away at jump.
Oh, are we going back to Bert Lello being carried off on a stretcher shouting at Neil
Hilariously.
Morpay?
Which also won Argentina the World Cup.
It did. That's funny you should say that. But
Yeah.
okay, well, it's fair to say JP very much enjoyed his moment in the sun, and off he went to celebrate with 50 close friends and family who all sat in the in the East Stand. All came over on the Sunshine Bus, and from all the way from Holland. Brilliant.
I mean, that must be. I mean, let's put ourselves in, if we can, in JP's boots for a moment. That must be something so special, so awesome. I think he did score one goal for Blackburn. No,
He scored more than one,
I think
Jack.
he scored. I think he scored half a dozen for when he was at Nac Breda,
At
in only about
Heerenveen, wasn't
11
it?
games. But yeah, but the point is, it was a Premier League goal, and. Like I say, 50 members of your family being there. They've come, from a different country to, I mean, I think they've been before, but even so, to actually do that in front of them, we're probably, and you look back on also that thing a couple of weeks ago when Mitoma scored that worldie against Chelsea, and that bloke Charlie was there to see it. That 72-year-old Japanese fan that came
Yeah.
over. I mean, those bits. Not only is it great scoring a goal for your club, that's wonderful, but to do it in front of your family, I'm just sort of like, kind of in awe of him. And you know what I feel about him, AD, because I'm still having him. I'm not changing my mind from my pre-season
Yeah.
prediction of him being
Amazingly,
player of the
that was only the
season.
third goal of his career.
Say again.
That was only the third goal of his career.
What, in England? No, because like I say,
Total.
he scored a half a
Total.
dozen for Nac Breda.
No, he didn't score anything that Breda. According to Soccerbase, he didn't play for Nac Breda. He played for Heerenveen, which is where he came from, where we signed him from.
All
But
right, okay.
there might have been a loan somewhere else, possibly. But oh yeah, Nac Breda. Yeah, no, he did play for Nac Breda. You're right, but he scored no goals, no appearances.
No, he scored four goals for Nac Breda.
Well, there we go. Well,
In the Dutch
we'll
second
have a
division.
stat off.
No, 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 no. It's fine. He scored. So season 2019, 2020 in the Dutch second division.
Right.
He scored 4 goals in 16 appearances. I mean, was that from centre back or they just got rubbish people
There you
at
go.
thing? But
I
that's
think
the
we
point
could
about
probably
Albion
safely
scouting. Here
say.
we are. We've picked him up from the Dutch second division for bugger all, and he's about to become, you know, all right, he's still only got two Dutch caps, but he's about to become, you know, the go-to defender, centre back for the Netherlands national side.
And also, they're improving our previously dreadful record of signing players from the Dutch league.
Yes.
I still wouldn't sign a striker from there. You've
Yeah.
been burned too many times.
Just still scarred by Lacazette and Elvis Manu.
Well, you look at our Dutch contingent,
Roland
how many are
Bergkamp once for
forwards?
kids.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that Jurgen Lacazette still follows us on social media, and he's very entertaining, and he's a big Albion fan by the looks of it.
Yeah,
So,
fine, but like you
oh,
notice
well,
our
I'd
Dutch
be if they'd
contingent.
been paying me 10 grand a year for a couple of seasons. 10
It'll be
grand a
more than
week,
that, I
even.
reckon. But
Yeah, a
there we
week,
go.
not a
10 grand a
year.
year, I'll do that. Yeah, that's all
Okay,
right.
well, that saw us go in 1-1 at half time. We had the ball in the net a couple of other times, both correctly ruled out. I mean, Minte very close to being onside, as was Adingra. I mean, actually, the ball for Adingra is from Adam Webster was absolutely sensational.
I think it was actually indicative of the fact that we did improve in the second half. You know, I thought the first
Don't we
half was a little
always?
bit even Stevens, but in the second half, I'm not sure if Fulham wilted a little bit or just we were better. That's not to say we absolutely peppered their goal, but it got to the point, I think, you daren't admit it after 80 minutes and say, well, Verbruggen hasn't had a shot to save in the second half because you know that gives it the knackers. But after 80 minutes, I was thinking, Verbruggen hasn't had a save to make in the second half.
Yeah.
And I don't think he did at all in the second half, did he?
They only had one shot on target all game, and that was the goal.
Yeah.
Well, and the point is that all right, it's not as though we peppered their goal,
Yeah.
but the performance was a lot better. But I think and again, as I said to you, Adrian, and this is something that Hertzler picked up on. The intensity that we'd played against Newcastle, that we played against Bournemouth, certainly played against Chelsea, I don't think it was there. I think we were playing slightly at sort of half speed. Maybe they're looking at the Man City game. Maybe they were knackered after the Cup game. I don't know, but
Yeah,
there
Tom.
was a lack of intensity. I thought about the performance generally. It's just Fulham were even less intense in the second half.
Tom.
I think it's the intensity that stepped up in the second half, which is what won it. And I don't know whether Fulham had just settled too much into the pace of the game from the first half and expected it to be the same, but it did feel like we were pushing a lot harder
Yeah.
and keeping the pressure on them a lot more in the second half, even if we weren't putting the ball into the box or creating clear chances. But yeah, I just think there was a real step change in our approach second half, and actually, you know, we spoke earlier about our record against Fulham in the Premier League, and it's been kind of peppered by good first half performances and terrible second half performances. So it's nice to flip the script on that and put in a really good second half and ultimately win it.
Okay.
I think also
Okay,
against
well, we're going to come back
Fulham
and
in
talk about
midfield.
the joys of last minute goals very shortly. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with the brilliant Flowers Unlimited. Now, Al,
Hello.
our good friend Dave Costa at Flowers Unlimited, he's been very generous again, isn't he?
He's lovely that way. We love him. Thanks, Dave, for sponsoring the Albion Roar for this past season. Yes, Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, for all your floral needs. Now, at the end of the month, it's Mothering Sunday. And Flowers Unlimited, in association with the Albion Roar, are happy to offer this as a prize. They're offering two sets of prizes, some flowers and some really nice chocolates, and a second prize of some flowers and some more chocolates. So we've got two sets of prizes to give away, but we're still going to only ask one competition question, and that is this, because we racked our brains trying to think of some football flower crossover football limit, but
Mother.
we're going for flowers and geography here. There is a square in Hove that is hosted for many, many years, the Floral Clock. Could you tell us what the name of that square is? So what is the square in Hove that is home to the floral clock? If you think you know, email us your answer to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. That's thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. You've got until Tuesday, the 18th of March, Friday. Let's start that again. Tuesday, the 18th of March, 5 o'clock, to let us know. And we will choose two of the correct answers from all our entries. So just that question again. There is a square in Hove which has hosted for many years the floral clock. What is the name of that square?
Okay. And before we go on, we've mentioned this over the last couple of weeks as well, but there is a charity football match happening at Woodside Road on the 22nd of March. Brighton Hove Albion legends take on a Celeb 11.
They've actually called themselves, now I realised, it's the Rocking Horse All-Stars.
The Rocking... Well, there are some stars in that team.
There are.
The likes of John Richardson, Joe Wilkinson, and then one else called Son. No, Maisie Adams playing. Brett Mendoza is playing. It's mostly the Renfe team that are playing, frankly.
Basically, have you seen that? Did you see Maisie Adam on the BHA podcast? If you haven't had a chance, do listen into that. Her and Susie Ruffle, superb.
Okay. Anyway, moving swiftly on, Vicky.
Sorry, hang on, before you do that. Yeah. And the other thing we've got to announce, obviously, is the weekend of April the 12th and 13th is the Reverbathon. Radio Reverb is a community radio station which funds itself by grants, donations, and bequests. And we would like to keep this radio station going. So we're asking you very kindly, if you don't mind sticking your hand in your pocket, to contribute towards this brilliant community project. Yeah. By all means, get involved in the Reverbathon. Just go to radioreverb.com and click on the Reverbathon button on the front page. Or if you wish to donate, there's a donate button further down the page, and you can do that as well. We are on air.
We are broadcasting from 10 o'clock live from Brighton's Open Market. We are hoping to have a very special guest come along and join us on that day, which will more details once it's confirmed. But yeah, we don't do the shows from the open market as often as we'd like these days because of our new schedule. But yeah, we're very much looking forward to it and getting along and making some money for Reverb. So if you can help, please do.
But not just come along and see us. There's the next day, 13th of April, Sunday the 13th of April, at the Hope and Ruin pub. Again, come along and see us and give us all your money. So yeah, the Reverbathon, 12th and 13th of April, to help keep this brilliant community radio station going.
Okay, now Vicky, last minute goals are fun, aren't they?
Well, they're great. They're the best way to go, aren't they? I said after that game I would rather, I honestly think I'd rather beat somebody 1-0 or 2-1, whatever it is, by one goal in the dying seconds than beat them 4-0. And I'm very happy with that.
Really?
I feel a bit bad now because I kind of said that after the game that I hoped all the Fulham fans had a thoroughly miserable journey home. And actually, Fulham fans are generally okay. They're certainly not the most offensive fans from that part of the world, are they? But I think, yeah, there's something about the last minute goal, isn't there? You can't come back. You're not gonna give it away. It's just great, satisfying.
There's last minute goals though, and there's last minute penalties. I think last minute penalties are just on a whole other level. I mean, the noise in the stadium when the penalty was given was like a goal had just been given, and just like the energy that gave you, and then suddenly the dread of, oh my God, we've got to score it now.
It's Fulham, we'll probably miss it. Yeah.
Before we did that, I don't know if you noticed that as soon as the penalty was given, of all people, you can just see him on the screen when he said, but I saw it live in the stadium, Estupiñán celebrated like he'd just scored a worldie. And I'm thinking, that's very Robbie Savage. Don't do that, because we haven't scored yet. But maybe it was just the tension being released that, you know, knowing full well it was nearly the last kick of the game and we've got a penalty.
Best knee slide since knockout. So
crash bang wallop. Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is that the last, I mean, I could probably think of another if I had to, but when I'm thinking of last minute goals that isn't a penalty, the one that really sort of springs to mind that I went proper disco mental at was Pedro's against Marseille at the Amex. I mean, the stadium roof, how it's still there, I've no idea. But yeah, sorry, that when it comes to a penalty, it's you'd like to think it's as good as a goal, and Pedro's record actually, he really is, you know, it's outrageous. I mean, the only one he's missed, he ended up knocking in the follow, you know, following in.
Yeah, against Everton, yeah.
Yeah. So my point would be is that you think, you know, the law of averages says you're going to miss one day. Please not now. You know, you by all means miss one when we're 6-0 up. You know, but not when it's the last kick of the game against Fulham, who we haven't beaten since time immemorial.
Yeah, but the thing is, obviously he did step up and he did convert it, and I think Leno did get a hand to it, but the power just took it in. But it was just the togetherness of. I mean, it's a last minute goal. Obviously, everyone is absolutely going to be delighted and thrilled. But you know, everyone was all bundling, and the subs, so all the players. It was great. And apparently, and someone gave Danny Welbeck a hat. I don't quite know how that happened, but he's making hats great again.
Well, the thing is this, sorry, I'm just going to say before someone else comes in, I'm just going to say that it puts to bed once and for all the lie about anything about, you know, Hertzler hasn't got the dressing room, Hertzler this, you know, players this. You saw what that meant to each and every one of them. Anyone who could have piled in did pile in. So let's put to bed once and for all that there's any sort of dressing room angst, or there's any sort of. I'm sure they have their bickers. I'm sure they have their arguments. On a day-to-day basis, people love each other and get on, do so very much. But in the great scheme of things, that is a very together squad. And I think
Yeah.
that is the thing. That's one of the things that actually gives me optimism towards, you know, as regards the rest of the season, Vic.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think I'm sure I've said it before. I think the old lost the dressing room thing is a very lazy analysis by people that actually generally have no idea what's going on. But we're not winning games, therefore the manager must have lost the dressing room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of
But
that.
the other thing that I was quite pleased to see in this game is, and obviously I'm going to talk about progression and what we can achieve in a minute. But what I was particularly delighted about, there was players that came on the pitch as last minute substitutes or late substitutes on Saturday. The likes of Mats Fifa, Solly March came on, Diego Gomez, Al,
Yeah,
and.
all right,
And you know, and the way that they are growing into this team, and you know, Paul Barber was saying the other day about like, you know, we're in transition. Obviously, these players are bedding in, but we're beginning to see the fruits of that, and they look like they can only actually get better.
I mean, you forget that at the start of the season, we had a completely new backroom staff. We had lost our greatest ever player in Pascal Gross. We'd lost other players. We were coming off the back of quite a negative kind of end to the season where we were terrible from the Roma game onwards. And you've got to turn that around. We also spent a lot of money and not a lot of new faces. I mean, that's a hard ask for a new manager to come in and kind of
Wasn't he the
reach that.
youngest ever manager, Tom? Did anyone point that out to you?
Rings a bell.
Right.
Yeah, I think he's even younger than me, which is the most painful thing about football at the moment. But yeah, I think, you know, that context makes what Hertzler's doing even more phenomenal. You know, 50% win rate with 10 games to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, I think your point, AD, you're saying about those players now coming to the fore. I mean, there's a lot of them seem to have an injury as well. I mean, there's even these little cameos, these little things. Mats Wiefer coming on and doing two crunching, well, a double tackle with bugger all left. Admittedly, it was still one all, but he was getting in there.
I thought he made it really, you know, he's a I appreciate that everyone still remembers him for that Wolves game, and I will maintain that Matheus Cunha had to get past a whole lot of other players to score that goal, all of whom backed off of him until he got the opportunity to shoot. So yes, it was an awful pass by Wiefer, but you know what, there was other players on the team that should have held their hands up too. But he's a very, very tidy footballer. I think we were just starting to get a bit scrappy again, or running out of ideas at the end of the Fulham game. Having been the better side for me in that second half, perhaps just needed some fresh ideas. And I really thought that he brought that in when he came on. I think Gomez was good as well, but I thought Vifa is very tidy. He dropped back, sat just in front of the defenders. He picked the ball up. And the difference from perhaps others who'd been out there, and that's not to say that they had a bad game, but the difference when Vifa came on, I thought, was that when he got the ball, his instinct was to turn and look forward. And how can I make this, what can I do with the ball here to make it go forward rather than just the kind of the delicate knocking it around the back line? And what do we all know? Because let's be honest, if any of us stands there and says at the end of that game in the dying seconds when we're faffing around and just passing it across the midfield, Sarah's people were shouting behind me, we're lying, aren't we? We are lying, let's be honest with you. We're thinking, come on, it's got to go, it's got to go, it's got to go. And they stay patient and it works out in the end.
Yeah, Tom.
I think it's a testament to Hertzler as well because, it's bold in a game to swap both your central midfielders against a very good side and also taking off arguably your most talented player in Belieber. Like that's bold calls. And his substitutions over the last few weeks have been bold, but they've also been game changing and game winning. And I
Newcastle
think he
away, for
deserves
instance. Yeah.
a lot of credit for that. And I think, Costa or Gomez, whoever it is coming in
Yes.
the summer, just
No,
really,
I mean, you
really.
do realize I'm editing that out, so that statement
No,
makes
you're
no
not
sense.
now.
So, coming in January, I think, the way that he's playing, just it drives the team forward. It adds a slightly different dynamic, and I
Yeah.
think makes up for subbing someone like Belieber off. And then when you've got Vifa coming on and playing like he is at the moment, that depth is great.
Yeah. Well, did we
It's
make this
beginning
point?
to give
Sorry,
him an
Aidan.
awful lot of headaches, isn't it, as well, Al? Because it's like, I mean, we've been saying on the show over the last few weeks how much we've really enjoyed the impact that Diego Gomez is actually having. And we were talking to Hans Kraaij last week, a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that what Mats Wiefer is going to be, you haven't seen the best of him yet. He's going to be insane for you. In Crane saying, yeah, I
In
thought
Crane
so.
saying,
Yeah.
insane in the membrane.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and we've discussed this in the last couple of weeks about the depth of quality we now have in central midfield. I mean, and when all fit, the choice is pretty spectacular. You've got
Yeah.
all right. Belieber is obviously going to be the first one on the team sheet. By the way, can I throw out there a potential nickname for him? I want to call him the psychedelic duck because when admin is actually filming the players as they come back into the dressing room after the game. Have you seen the sort of silly walks and dances he does?
Oh,
He,
Belieber.
yeah. He, if you haven't realised it, watch again. He just does these silly
Oh, yeah.
walks and
He
dances.
loves it.
Yeah, the psychedelic duck. Anyway, so you've got Belieber, who's going to be the first choice. Then you've got the choice of is it going to be Ayari alongside him or Hinshelwood? Wiefer when he's fit. O'Reilly when he's fit. The choice is the choices are massive.
Okay.
And are only getting better. Hinshelwood, you can see, is still a work in progress. He didn't have a great game against Fulham, I don't think. But then, for me, that's because I think that he's lost. It's a bit like now Pascal Gross. He's lost. His talents are wasted at right back. He might have started out there really, really well, but for me, he is now a central midfielder.
No. Well, that's how he got
Good
his
for Newcastle.
opportunity, though, wasn't it, Sam?
Yeah, and I'm going to make a bold call here. I think Hinchwood deserves an England call-up.
Already.
Yeah. I think it now's a good time to bring him into the England squad if you think he's got a future there. A couple of good fixtures against teams. And I think, he is arguably one of the most in-form midfielders within the
Okay.
league.
Sorry, Vicky, you were going to say something?
Yeah, just I think with Hinchwood, I think my opinion, I think he's a fantastic footballer. He's got such a good footballing brain. I thought he was excellent at Newcastle in that game there. To be fair, even at Forest in that debacle, he was probably one of the few that was sort of trying to make things happen. But I agree he shouldn't be a million miles off. I think the issue that Hinchwood will have is the sheer volume of midfielders that are qualified for England and are probably, well, there's no doubt in most cases that are ahead of him at the moment. You've got Bellingham, obviously the existing starters, but even on the fringes, you've got someone like Wharton at Palace, who's just come back from a long injury, but he's played for England before. There's a lot of names out there. You've got Alexander Arnold, who can play in midfield, which frankly spares us his defending. So I think
Yeah,
that's
Curtis Davis as well.
But it's a new manager with new ideas and going to want to have it. And
Absolutely.
how many times has Tuchel actually been at Brighton games over the last few weeks? He's been at a fair few.
That's
So
true.
he's obviously
Are you
watched
saying
the
Adam
team.
Webb's has got a chance as well?
I'll give
No.
it Webberdini.
Well, okay, well, the one that's been thrown out there a lot, Vicky. And I'm not sure if it's something that's sentimental or something that's just almost a little bit desperate. Is people talking about Welbeck back in the England side? Can you see it?
I don't think it will happen because I can't remember how old he is now. Is he 33?
33,
34.
34, something like that,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. You know, if he was, even if he was 30 potentially, I think he's great for us. I guess, especially on the basis that you've got a new manager coming in, he's going to want to look forward, isn't he? And
Yeah.
therefore,
But
you've
but
got
Tuchel's
confidence.
only on a short-term contract. He's basically his job is to win the World Cup, and he'll do it with whatever age players are. I mean, I personally, I said it on the show the other week, I don't want Welbeck to go to England.
No.
Being selfish, with his injury record, we want to keep him as fit as long as we can. I mean, we didn't actually talk about it too much on the show the other week, Al, the fact that he's now level with Pascal Gross on the Premier League
You know
goal
that doesn't
scorers.
count. You know that doesn't
I
count.
know it doesn't count with you, but it does to an awful lot of people, Al, so.
I think you can also, the thing with Welbeck is you've also got someone like Liam Delap as well, who's obviously much, much younger, has probably got a similar number of goals this season. So I think logically, Tuchel will look at
I
him.
can't see it myself.
Yeah, I
No.
can't see it. I mean, if he was picked, it wouldn't be ridiculous, but I don't see it happening.
I can see Hinshaw with a captain in the under 21s. I think he's head and shoulders above. I mean, he is clearly one of the better young players, certainly one of the best teenagers in the country. For all the hype that you get about this next Chelsea kid or this next Manchester City kid,
Oh, he's a shoo-in
there
for
is
the 21s.
yeah, but there is a consistency about Hinshaw. It's not someone who blows hot and cold. He is a minimum 6.5 out of 10, and most games he's 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
I think if the managers, the New England managers, anything like the last one, then Eddie Nketiah may as well start packing his suitcase to go away. And that would be ridiculous, but that's where we're at, isn't it?
Yeah.
The other thing, though, just to say is, Hinshelwood is arguably a consistent starter and one of the top performers of what could be a top five team in England.
Yes.
How many other English players are playing at that level within the Premier League? So you then
Ellie
start
Anderson might
looking
get a
at,
go, maybe. Ellie
are you
Anderson.
talking about English roses there, Tom? Because I can tell you about some roses because you can get them at Flowers Unlimited, Al. And we have a competition before we go to win for Mothering Sunday.
Just to recap that those who weren't listening 20 minutes ago. Yes, we have a competition for two sets of prizes, flowers and chocolates. The question, should you wish to win this prize or one of these prizes, is there is a square in Hove which hosts the floral clock. Could you tell us, please, the name of this square in Hove?
And
Please,
answers too.
and if you think you know the answer, just write it down. Send it on an email to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. You have until Tuesday, the 18th of March, 5 p.m. to send us your answer, and we will pick the winning aunt the winners from those all those correct answers. So good luck to everyone.
Okay. And with that is all we have time for. So thank you so much to Tom Hyland. Thank you to Vicky Rees. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailie Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks. Bye.
If the sun refuses to shine, I don't mind. I don't mind. If the mountains fill in the sea, let it be. It ain't me. Turned out to be nice. Oh, I don't mind. Oh, I don't mind. If all the hippies cut off all their hair.